The Rebel Capitalist Show, episode 163.
Welcome to the podcast that helps you build wealth and thrive in a world of out-of-control central banks and big governments. This is the Rebel Capitalist Show.
All right, guys, it gives me a great deal of pleasure to bring someone to the Rebel Capitalist Show that we have all been looking forward to speaking with. He is someone I have a tremendous amount of respect for. He has really influenced my thinking going all the way back to 2012 when I took the economic red pill. It was Mike Maloney, Jim Rogers, Peter Schiff, guys like that. And today I'm really honored to have Mike Maloney right here with us. Mike, welcome to the Rebel Capitalist Show.
Thanks for having me, George. It's great to be here.
Now, I've been looking at several of your most recent videos, which are absolutely fantastic. And you just had a discussion about the Great Reset and with Klaus and with the World Economic Forum. And what we want to try to focus on today is kind of the end game. And I thought since that's on everyone's mind right now, that would be a great place to start.
Yeah, I think, we really are at the end game. It's interesting. I wrote my book back in 2005, 6, and 7. It came out just before the market crash in 2008, so it became a best-selling book because of the timing. And the timing was sort of, an accident, but in it, I predicted a whole lot of the stuff that is happening. It has taken a lot longer for all of this to unfold, but you can see that if you look at episode 7 of Hidden Secrets of Money, if your viewers will take a look at that, in there, part of it, where we animated certain sections of the book. It's narrated and animated. And you can see that it's the beginnings of this end game are just playing out right now. The huge expansion of the currency supply and the collapse of velocity to offset the expansion of the currency supply, mitigating retail inflation. But it stores energy, and we have historic precedences for this. We've got, I use Weimar Germany in this example, but Weimar Germany, back then, the world didn't have the modern financial system revolved on debt. The world wasn't like that back in 1918 through 1923. People actually owned things.
It's shocking.
And we had money back then, not fugazis, as you say. So, right.
How does the Great Reset come into that? Because what you just said there, people used to own things. And I the first thing that came to my mind is the World Economic Forum's push towards us renting everything. I sent out a tweet the other day where they had these projections for 2030. And one of their projections is you will own nothing, or you will rent everything, you will own nothing, and you will be happy. Those were their words, not mine.
Yeah.
So how do you think that Great Reset plays into your end game kind of analysis of potential inflation?
Well, I want to ask you, if you own nothing and you're renting everything, who are you renting from? You're renting from somebody that owns it.
Right.
Is this Klaus? Is he the one that owns everything?
Exactly.
Is it the people that meet at Davos? I was really not a conspiracy theorist. I used to say, I do not deal in conspiracy theory. What I'm saying is true. Go here and read it.
Yeah.
This is just, it's so crazy that all the conspiracy theorists, they're the ones that have been right about all of this stuff. There are people in the background trying to control the world. And this enslaves all of us. I don't think you're going to be happy. I don't think, owning nothing and renting everything, that's basically communism, because
exactly.
In communism, you own nothing, but you have to work to stay a part of having access to supposedly all own in common, except it produces the greatest wealth disparity of all. The more you go towards socialism and communism, and all of the people that are advocating socialism, they just do not know what socialism is. They don't know what communism is. Marx had a tough time discerning between socialism and communism. In the Communist Manifesto, he used the terms interchangeably. And there are subtle differences. But when you don't own anything, there's less incentive. And when everything, there's, you know what the tragedy of the commons is. And I think, you know, when I look at what they're doing to the monetary system, they're going to push this thing until it breaks. And when it does break, they're going to have one of the reasons I think that we haven't gotten any more stimulus checks, that that the government hasn't been doing the big second round of this, is because the digital wallets from the Federal Reserve aren't ready yet.
Right.
And so they're going to wait until it is ready. And, you know, in your video, one of the things that you pointed out that I had forgotten about is that the currency can be programmed. Mm-hmm. And so they can prevent you from traveling. They can prevent you, you know, if they don't like you, your interest rate is going to be higher. Your ability to get a mortgage, it will be either completely cut off or very, very controlled. If they do like you, then you, you know, and so the ability to travel, I mean, they really could make it so that you can't buy, get an airline ticket or buy less, less than, you know, more than 50 miles from your home, whatever they want. They can limit where you can buy groceries. They can go negative interest rates in your digital wallet. In other words, currency just slowly vanishes. You got to use it or lose it. So when they want to velocity to pick up, because see, that's what I think that was what really must burn them up a lot is that they've got interest rates down at zero.
Right.
And they can't get the economy going. And then they create all this currency and velocity just drops to offset what they've done. They can't control. They don't have a dial or a lever or a switch for velocity.
Right.
And that upsets them. And they will have that switch or dial when we have digital wallets and all of our expenditures are done through this. But what I've told my viewers is, you know, if you, even I will have a tough time once the amount that I can claim by downloading my digital wallet exceeds $10,000 or $20,000 or $50,000, I might become part of this system as well. But what I'll make sure that I do is only make large payments, like you know, if you've got a mortgage payment or a car payment or something that's not trackable, where you're just paying the bank for, you know, then those are the payments that you should be making with this. Give them as little data as possible.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. So on that note, Mike, I'd love to get your thoughts on something I've been thinking through extensively. I briefly touched on it with a video the other day, but it's this idea that if we have this central bank digital currency, we'll call it a Fed coin, as you know, we all have to have an account with the Fed. So they'll basically see our bank statement or every single transaction, all 350 million Americans make daily. They'll see it in real time. And what I was thinking is, okay, you take this back to communist Russia. And if you're someone who truly believes in socialism and you think this is late stage capitalism, then you know that one of the problems, or one of the main problems, and one of the main reasons communist Russia failed was because they didn't have a way to properly allocate resources because there was no price discovery. And so I was thinking, well, what if this is a way for them to integrate artificial intelligence into the central banking system to create this socialist utopia that where they don't need price discovery or price signals because they've got the artificial intelligence crunching all of the data from every single transaction that every American is making daily. Do you think, I mean, I know it's kind of a stretch, but I'd love to get your thoughts on that.
I think that what they're doing eventually leads to that, that would be the ultimate goal of this. And the thing is, the free market does this very well already. And we don't have a free market. We haven't since the establishment, you know, in the United States, the Federal Reserve. But whenever an entity is manipulating interest rates or the quantity of currency, that's 50% of every transaction. Exactly. Therefore, you don't have a free market because the currency that you're using is being manipulated. Well, they want to manipulate it more, and they're going to be able to get us to do this and do that. PhDs with, you know, they may have very high IQs, but they can't see the forest for the trees. They get lost in all of their formulas and graphs and things, and they just don't. I can't believe that they don't understand fundamental economics. The people at the Federal Reserve don't understand that wealth is the goods and services that we all create for one another, and that GDP is just you and I being able to transact together. You know, if they allow us to make a transaction with as few impediments as possible, that's going to create prosperity. But yeah, they want to track us. They want to know everything that we're doing. It will ultimately lead to that. But artificial intelligence is a program that can learn and rewrite itself and learn and rewrite itself. So what are we going to go through in the period where it's learning? When it hasn't really got it right yet.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. This is that's a big question. I hadn't really thought of it, but human interaction and emotion is what causes the source of all prosperity is just you creating a good or service that I want, and we right. make a transaction. That's the source of all of it. The people at the world's central banks think that the source of prosperity is the measurement tool that we use to value all of the goods and services that we create. The real wealth is the goods and service. The currency is nothing but a measurement tool and a temporary storage device for value. And when I interviewed Steve Forbes years ago, he said that, the U.S. dollar is like, if you live in the Northeast, you go into a restaurant or something and there's a coat check there. You go into a restaurant in New York, you check your coat, and you get a little claim check for your coat. And Steve Forbes says, Federal Reserve thinks if you make more claim checks, coats will magically appear.
Yeah, that's such a good analogy, isn't it? I was listening to a podcast the other day with Grant Williams and one of my favorites, Chris Cole. And he was talking about how the dollar, or any fiat currency, is simply a thought abstraction. And the only thing that gives it value is the fact that we as a society believe it has value. And when belief is gone, a piece of paper no longer has any value. And it just goes back to everything that you've been talking about for decades almost, and your whole series on money creation. And it's just when I heard that, I'm like, Mike, I'd love for Mike to hear this, if you didn't hear that already.
Yeah, well, Milton Friedman was saying that what gives currency purchasing power is your faith that since it bought something yesterday, it's going to buy something tomorrow. Yeah. But it's more than just that. It's also a receipt, a proof that your enslavement is happening. Because in order for every dollar to come into existence at the base currency level, currency in circulation and the currency that the banks use between themselves. You've explained all of this to the viewers very well, so I don't have to do that. You've done a marvelous job at explaining all of these things. And I want to thank you for all of your efforts in trying to push the world toward understanding things. Because when you understand these things, this enslavement comes at us a little bit slower, and maybe we can actually defeat it. But every dollar that the Federal Reserve creates is it's proof that they have counterfeited currency into existence and acquired an asset, because they can't get it into circulation unless they counterfeit the currency and buy something. Mm-hmm. So they get to go around just counterfeiting currency and buying stuff. And that's supposed to support prices and stuff. But here's an entity that we allow counterfeiting that's bidding assets away from us. They're now, you know, involving themselves in the stock markets and stuff. It used to just be bonds. But when they buy a bond, they're buying a future cash flow stream from its future taxation. That they're, you know, we pay taxes in the future for every dollar that exists. We pay something. You either pay your mortgage, if it's a mortgage-backed security, or you pay, you know, they used to not have mortgage-backed securities on their balance sheet. It was all treasuries. And you paid taxes in the future to pay for the prosperity that you're enjoying today. It's all owed back in the future.
This podcast is brought to you by Rebel Capitalist Pro, the best online investing research. I have teamed up with Chris McIntosh and Lynn Alden, two of the best in the business, to create Rebel Capitalist Pro and give you the tools you need to build wealth and thrive in this crazy world of economic insanity. Rebel Capitalist Pro is jam-packed with Chris and Lynn's incredible research. We have live stream Q&As where you can ask your questions directly to Chris, Lynn, and myself. And the best of all, there's an online member forum which allows you to network, learn, and explore ideas with like-minded individuals. What are you waiting for? Check out Rebel Capitalist Pro right now at georgegammon.com/pro. That's georgegammon.com/pro. Take action today and do something your future self will thank you for.
On that note, I was doing some research the other day, and it just shocked me, because I was going through the balance sheet of the government, and we always talk about the debt. The debt's at $27 trillion, the debt's skyrocketing, the deficit's at almost $5 trillion this year, and I'd love to touch on that in a moment. But we never focus on the asset side of their balance sheet. And they only have $3.8 trillion in assets against $27 trillion in liabilities. And what I found really disturbing was the if you look at a pie chart of their assets, the majority of their assets are actually student loans. So and as you know, you can't wipe that out in bankruptcy. So you think about all the money that they're creating, which is future taxation, which is going to be the burden on the kids in college now. And you combine that with all this student loan debt, which is the asset or the main asset of the government that's actually taxing them. And I was just like, wow, it's indentured servitude.
Yeah, this is indentured servitude. This is just absolutely horrible what is going on. And the I think that, you know, I'm from an era where there was still slide rules. I used to call them slide rule brained, but these calculator brained guys that are at the Fed that cannot see the forest for the trees. They see the details and they've got these theories and stuff, but they don't know the difference between true wealth and the currency that they create. They are going along with this. I'm not sure if they're the ones that have the plan. I think it's these people like Klaus, and these Davos people and stuff that are behind the scenes pulling the strings. It's, you know, I don't like going down a conspiracy theory rabbit hole, but Klaus has said enough already to where it's no longer a conspiracy theory rabbit hole. It's right out there in the open now that there are people that sort of want to rule the world and decide how our lives are going to be and plan everything for us and force us into their system.
Yeah.
It's pretty scary. But when you look, you know, you were just talking about the assets and liabilities. The government you're talking about the balance sheet of the Federal Reserve or the balance sheet of the federal government?
The federal government.
Yeah. Okay. So a lot of the assets that are on there too are the military bases, BLM land, the national parks, all the government buildings. And when you look at assets and liabilities, they're almost insolvent as it is.
Oh, they're wildly insolvent because they've got $3.8 trillion in assets and 27 trillion, and that's just on balance sheet, and liabilities. I mean, it's unbelievable. In fact, in one of my videos I just did, I think yesterday even maybe, I was talking about how the next time you drive down the street and you see a homeless guy asking for change, just keep in mind that that person is like $21 trillion richer than the United States government.
That is hilarious. I've never heard that. Now, which financial it's the consolidated financial report of the U.S. government. Did you get it at the GAO or the Treasury? Because I have noticed that there are differences. You can go to one official website and there is the net position of the United States government is different than another government website. So, but the last chart that I did, I went to the Federal Reserve's website, and this is, there's information being provided by the IMF and stuff, but it was talking about the, I'm going to get the chart in front of me real quick.
Yeah.
It was the assets minus liabilities. Total debt to equity for the United States. And they put it at 95%. The ratio is at 95, according to that chart from Fed's website. I haven't, I used to, from 2005 until probably 2016, I would maybe 2014, I would download the consolidated financial statement of the United States every year and print that thing. And it's like a, you know, 3/4 or an inch thick, and put it in a binder and keep it on my desk. And I'd have all these tabs in it and stuff, trying to figure all of this stuff out. But it was like a reference thing. I have to admit, I have not done that in like the past 4 or 5 years.
Oh yeah. So, I just Googled it. I just Googled like assets of the federal government, and actually an article from Simon Black with Sovereign Man came up. That was 2019, where he pegged it, and he had this pie chart about 3.8 trillion. And I noticed that was pretty consistent with some other things that I saw just on Google, but he was the one that pointed out, just how egregious the student loan debt is when you compare it to the assets or the rest of the assets of the government. And so I got to give him all the credit in the world right there.
They're on the balance sheet of the U.S. government. So the U.S. government had to use tax. The U.S. government doesn't print currency. So I guess they had to use tax revenues to make these to buy all of these student loans that are packaged up, right?
Or back them. I have no idea how that works. I'd have to really get into the nitty gritty. It's just the first thing that struck me is that all these unfortunate kids who are going to pay higher and higher tax rates in the future due to what they're doing, when you combine that with them never going to be able to get out of that student loan debt. Well, who knows? They might, if we get MMT, they might just completely wipe it out and give them a get out of jail free card type thing. But then that just makes the federal government even more solvent than they already are, which I guess at this point really isn't a big deal.
We've reached an game. If you've got shrinking GDP but exploding debt, the GDP is the ability to pay the debt.
Exactly.
We've had this giant contraction. And I believe that that's going to get worse. I see a banking crisis coming up shortly sometime. Nobody knew the Lehman Brothers thing was happening until a Monday morning when they've already arranged these, we didn't know about, you get this surprise announcement that Monday morning there's a news on every single news channel, there's the Fed governor and the Secretary of the Treasury and stuff, and they're announcing that this thing happened. You don't find out about it until the crisis has already happened, and they've arranged what they think is the best fix for this thing. And there's a banking crisis brewing because you can't have all this mortgage forbearance. The landlords aren't, a lot of them aren't paying their mortgage because the renters aren't paying the rent. And then, you know, anybody that has lost their job because of this plandemic, there's so much forbearance going on. And then when the forbearance stops, you not only owe your mortgage payments, but you owe the mortgage payments you missed as well. So it's not like this doesn't have consequences. But the bank's balance sheets have to be getting pretty bad. And there's going, if I do expect another market crash or correction. And with that, I would think that we're going to have a banking crisis. It's really, you know, since 2000, I've been giving, and I think I wrote about it in my book, I've been giving presentations on the death of the global dollar standard. Now they call it, you know, in just the past several months, they're calling it the monetary reset or the Great Reset. But it's exactly what I've been warning about since 2009. And I used to make a list of all the nails in the dollar's coffin, and they used to come like one in a year, and then one in a month,
yeah,
and then
list
one
in a way too long.
now every day, I mean, every single day, there's numerous nails coming in every single day. And so you see that, because when I wrote my book, I was doing research on monetary history, and I had a book called Manias, Panics, and Crashes. And I listed every mania, panic, crash, every economic event that I could find in a spreadsheet, looking for something with regularity, where there's cycles. And the one thing leapt out at me was the change in global monetary systems. We had the classical gold standard until World War I. Everybody, all the combatants in Europe, ceased redemption rights, where they would back their currency with gold, and they lit up the printing presses. Then we had the Genoa emergency meeting of the world's finance ministers, the Genoa conference in 1922, and they came up with the intra-war gold standard, the gold exchange standard. That fell apart when we went into, so between the wars, and that fell apart when we went into the Great Depression and England pulled out of the gold standard. Then we had Bretton Woods system from 19, you know, another emergency meeting of the it's not G20 finance ministers. Then it was 44 countries. And then end of the Bretton Woods system in 71. And I can't remember whether it was the Washington Accord or the Smithsonian Agreement, but the name of that emergency meeting. And they came up with a new world monetary system, which fell apart. It didn't work. And what happened was we went on this default. The world had been flooded with dollars because of the Bretton Woods system. And so all the world's central banks held dollars and held U.S. treasuries. And so we just went on this floating exchange rate thing. As the whole thing fell apart, the default was the global dollar standard. It's the most poorly designed out of all of them. And but each one was a baby step off of gold that has never failed in 5,000 years, going more and more to a larger percentage being backed by something that always fails, 100% failure rate. And so now we're 100% fiat currency backed only debt and the promise to tax us in the future. And when I saw this pattern repeating, the shortest duration was 28 years, the longest duration was 40 years. Now we're at 49 plus. And if the dollar makes it to August 15th of 2021, that'll be 50 years on the global dollar standard. But you can see this is coming to an end, not quite as quickly as I predicted. I said it would end, it would be in this decade. So I've got until the end of December before we enter the next decade. But these digital wallets, cryptocurrencies, negative interest rates, this is a shift in world monetary system. You can see the cracks happening right now. It's crumbling and it's falling. The global dollar standard is falling apart, just as predicted. And it was obvious because no man-made system can account for all of the forces in the free market.
Yeah, that's right. That's such a great point. And Mike, I want to go ahead and conclude our discussion where we talk more about inflation, deflation, money printing, maybe the Great Reset, gold confiscation. I want to conclude that actually on your channel. So what we're going to do right here is I'm going to ask you one more question, if you don't mind, and then we're going to ask the viewers to hop on over to your channel where they can get the conclusion of what I think is probably one of the best interviews I've ever done. But before we do that, I want to go back just, you know, what you're saying about the mortgage-backed securities and whatnot. And one thought I had, and just going back to the first part of our conversation, we were talking about the Great Reset and that you'll own nothing, is that what if the Federal Reserve buys pretty much all the mortgage-backed securities, just like Japan has pretty much bought, you know, 60 or 70% of the Japanese debt. So they buy all the mortgage-backed securities. So if anyone defaults on the loan, basically the property goes to the Fed.
So exactly.
What would, I mean, does that take us closer, maybe if we have a big deflationary bust before we get an inflation, that, and then everyone loses their homes, very similar to what happened.
Ah, but you'll have a digital wallet. So now we go to that phase where you rent everything and own nothing.
Exactly. Exactly. That's where I was going with that.
The Federal Reserve is their stockholders are the world's largest banks, right?
Right. There you go. And
so the banks own everything. Even if it's going to the Federal Reserve, the banks still own it. This is just this, you know, this whole system was designed by Paul Warburg. And it's just absolutely tragic that we have gone down this road and these crazy Keynesians have led us into a minefield where no matter what direction we step right now, there's going to be an explosion. There's no way out of this except gold, silver, cryptos. Try to, if you can, get your own ability to grow food and things like that. There could be something horrific coming. I have no idea what it is, but everything has a bell curve of probabilities. Mm-hmm. But there's something called kurtosis, where the bell curve can get shifted one way or another. And I believe that the tail risk on one side was that everything would be rosy and just beautiful, you know, very low probability. Then there's the greatest probability, and then there's the low probability on the other side. Everything is shifted now to where what I see as the greatest probability is a global depression. But there is the tail risk of absolute modern dark ages at this point. I hate to be such a pessimist, but the thing is, at the end of these events, when there's, like if you look at any hyperinflation, or destruction of currency, what you see is a tremendous wealth transfer. Mm-hmm. And as people flee from whatever is losing value, as a whatever they have trusted as a store of value, when it starts losing value and they flee from it to something else, then there's a wealth transfer, and the people that already owned that thing that is gaining in value compared to the currency, as everybody else starts flooding over to that thing, the amount of wealth that is transferred from the people that it is a direct transfer of people writing other people checks necessarily.
Right.
It's all of the people losing value because they're hanging on to something that is losing value during a time where there's something else that's going up much quicker than the currency. And if there's like 1 in 1,000 people that own precious metals and even less with cryptos. And as people flood over to these other assets, the wealth transfer is going to be astounding because it's at a ratio of 1,000 to 1 then.
Right. All right, Mike. So let's, I think that's a great way to end it right there. So when we hop onto your channel, we can talk about all these things, plus what people can do in the future to actually protect themselves. So I want to thank you for your time, my friend. Again, it was an absolute honor, and we'll see everyone in just a couple minutes over on your channel.
Thank you, George. It was great being here.
Thank you for listening to the Rebel Capitalist Show. For more content like this, check out the Rebel Capitalist blog at georgegammon.com or go to the George Gammon YouTube channel.